Evening, everyone. As Abby said, I am Georgia. I've been at All Saints for about 3.5 years, I think, and I also work for All Saints and have been working for All Saints for about 2.5 years. And it's great to be here tonight as we continue looking at John, and tonight we're looking at John chapter 6, the feeding of the 5,000. So you can start turning there if you've got a Bible near you. So I'm continuing this series on John that we're looking at. We're looking at the miracles that John records of Jesus doing. And then we're looking at what that tells us about the character of Jesus. So Roz began our series 2 weeks ago, and Jonathan gave us the second instalment last week. And both of them reminded us the reason that John wrote his gospel. And I think we've got John. Do you want to put up John 20, verse 30? I'm just going to jump there first. You don't have to turn there, don't worry. But this is the reason that John... 30, don't worry if you haven't got it. So this is the reason that that John is writing this chapter. He's recording the miracles of Jesus in order that we may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that through our faith we might have life. So that is why John is writing everything that he writes in this gospel. This is the reason for him writing this book. And he does this by giving us signs throughout the chapters that he writes. He gives us signs about this Jesus that we are learning about. I don't know if any of you saw the series Downton Abbey, finished a couple of years ago. It's a period drama. And I think it was in their last season, a photo was taken of two of the characters all dressed in their 1920s gear in front of a fireplace. And on the mantelpiece, they had left a plastic bottle of water. And of course, the picture went viral because you wouldn't have plastic bottles of water in the 1920s. And they took a photo of all the cast holding a plastic bottle just to show that they enjoyed the laugh of it. But if you compare that to an animation or to a cartoon like Toy Story or Finding Nemo or Monsters, Inc. or something like that, then with each scene, with each picture that comes up, there is an artist that has been behind that picture and someone who has decided exactly what is going to be going into that scene. Each moment, each part of that picture is part of the story that they are telling. It is there completely on purpose. Nothing is in an animation by accident. And this is a sort of book that John is writing. Everything that he writes is in there on purpose to point us to Jesus as a sign, pointing us to Jesus, Messiah, the Son of God. So what does this passage tell us? I'm going to invite Jenny to come out and read it for us. And it's John chapter 6, if you're not there already, verses 1 to 15, the feeding of the 5,000.
Thanks. It's on page 1069, if you're looking for it in the church Bibles, starting in the beginning of chapter 6. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias, and a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the miraculous signs that he had performed on the sick. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover feast was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming towards him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, "8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up, "Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, but how far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they'd all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who is to come into the world." Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks, Jenny, for reading that for us. So John begins chapter 6 by talking us through the journey that Jesus takes his disciples on. First of all, they cross over the Sea of Galilee, and second, he takes them up onto a mountainside. And then that's when they see this crowd coming to follow them. And Jesus asks Philip, "Where will we buy enough bread to feed all these people?" And then in the passage Jenny read out, John adds in verse 6, Jesus asked this to test Philip. He already knew what he was going to do. Now, I'm a big fan of mountains. Lots of you know that I'm a big fan of mountains. I plan to go to Scotland twice this summer. Not for the sunshine, obviously, but for the mountains. And from my experience of climbing mountains, there is rarely enough food up them to feed 5,000 people. And in fact, this crowd could well have been closer to 15,000 people if you count up all the women and children that were probably there as well. And 15,000 people is enough to fill Centre Court at Wimbledon, if that helps you picture the number of people there. So there's not normally enough food for 5,000 people up a mountain. There's definitely not enough food for 15,000 people up a mountain. And in verse 6, it is implied that Jesus knew what was going to happen. Yet he still went up the mountain anyway. Now, if I had been Jesus, and I knew that a big crowd was following me because of the signs and wonders that I was doing, then I might have decided to stay a bit closer to the towns, to reduce the chance of leading 15,000 people up a mountain with no food. Thankfully for everyone, I'm not Jesus. And thankfully, Jesus had a plan, and he also had a purpose to all this. He wanted to lead the crowd into a situation where he had to be the one to feed them, miraculously, because this was one of the signs that would point to him as the Messiah, the Son of God. And then this also ties in with verse 4. John writes that at this time, the Jewish Passover feast was near. And this could seem like a throwaway comment, by the way, Passover was happening at this time. But we know, because John doesn't write like that, we know that it isn't a throwaway comment. He puts in the information that leads us to understand that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. So quick recap on Passover. Passover is what happened when God rescued his people, the Israelites, from Egypt. You can read about it in Exodus 13. In short, the Israelite nation were in slavery to Egypt. God called Moses to free his people. He asked Moses to go to Pharaoh and ask him to let God's people go. Pharaoh said no. God sent plagues. Pharaoh still said no. God sent more plagues. And eventually, the final plague was the death of the firstborn. And God gives these commandments to the people of Israel. Each household should take a lamb and on the 14th day kill the lamb and smear the blood of the lamb over the doorframe of your house. By this, God will know that when he passes through Egypt to pass over these households, the blood of the lamb protects them. So this happens, and as a result, Pharaoh lets the Israelite people go. They escape through the Red Sea. Parting of the Red Sea, and then God leads them into the desert where he provides manna for them each day. So that, in brief, is a story of Passover. And the Jewish people celebrate Passover each year, remembering their escape from Egypt and remembering God providing for them in a desert. And this is a festival that's about to happen when we get to John chapter 6. And John deliberately puts this in with the hope that we will connect this passage with Passover itself. The same God who sent manna down from heaven has come down to earth. This is Jesus, the Messiah. Jesus deliberately creates a situation where he can reveal himself as God who saved his people all of those years ago and provided for them in a desert. And in case we didn't quite get it from that miracle, then John adds what was happening at the time, that it was Passover, to help us make that connection. This is Jesus, our God and our provider. So we've looked at what Jesus did. He fed 5,000 people or more. We looked at why he did it, to show us that he is God who provides for us, the same God that provided for the people in the desert. He is a Messiah. But what about how he does it? How Jesus performs this miracle says loads about who he is. The miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 is in all four Gospels, but John, more than the other writers, spends time recording the conversations between Jesus and the disciples and the boy who gives his lunch. And this is kind of how I imagine a situation being if I was there watching it myself. Jesus is chatting to Philip about what to do. He sees all these people coming. Philip, what will we do? How will we feed all these people? Meanwhile, the other disciples are probably quite close as well. They're probably all gathered around Jesus. And they overhear this conversation. And I'm guessing that they start to have this conversation as well. Oh, how are we going to feed all these people? Maybe some are saying, oh, quick, let's get down. We can jump in our boats and get to the other side. We don't have to deal with it. Maybe some are saying, oh, you know, we could send the fastest people into town. Maybe they could try and get some ox or whatever animals were of that time and place, and bring food back up the mountain. I'm imagining that there is a discussion going on amongst all of the disciples. And meanwhile, while this is going on, a boy is coming up to the group, trying to get their attention with his lunch in a basket. There's a scene in the film The Lord of the Rings. Quite often use it as an example because that trilogy is mainly the only films I ever watch. But there's a scene in it where Frodo, who is the main character, who's the hobbit, he has brought the One Ring to a meeting that they're all having about what to do with the One Ring. So the One Ring has to be taken to Mordor to be destroyed, to destroy evil. That's the general story. And they get to a point where the ring is brought to this meeting and they're having a council to decide what to do with this One Ring. And basically all the characters there get into a big discussion, a big argument about who should take the ring, who should be the one to do it. And amongst the arguing, Frodo feels that he's the one who should take it, and he gets up and he starts saying, I will be the one to take the ring. But Frodo is a hobbit, so a hobbit is 3 feet tall. And he has a very quiet voice, and he's not being heard at all amongst the shouts of all these other people. And I imagine it could be something similar in this story. The disciples are discussing among themselves how on earth they will get food to feed all these people on the mountainside when a small boy comes up to them to offer his lunch. And he gets the attention of Andrew. And Andrew's like, he looks at it, he probably sees how small it is, but says, yeah, okay, I'll tell Jesus. And we read in verse 9, Andrew says, here is a small boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far will that go among so many? You can hear the disbelief in his voice. And I don't blame him, to be honest. Around 15,000 people to be fed with 5 loaves and 2 fish. And barley loaves are probably more similar to pita bread, the really flat bread. I mean, we're not talking about big loaves here. And the fish are described as small fish. They're not a big catch, basically. Which makes it sound even more unbelievable. How far will they go among so many? But that offer is all Jesus is waiting for. As soon as this boy offers his lunch, Jesus says, make the people sit down. And then we read in verse 11 that Jesus takes the loaves, he gives thanks, and distributes them to all who were seated, as much as they wanted. And he did the same with the fish. Now we believe that Jesus is the creator of all things. John begins this gospel with the words, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. And the Word that John is talking about is Jesus. And without him nothing was made that has been made. Everything was made through Jesus. So surely he has the authority to just click his fingers and they could all have a roast dinner in front of them if he wanted. But that's not how he chooses to do this miracle. He uses what he was given and he multiplies it. This is the character of Jesus. Now imagine for a moment being that boy in this massive crowd, gone to see Jesus. Would you give your lunch? I honestly don't know if I would give my lunch. Partly because I'm quite greedy and I'm very bad at sharing. I went to quite a small university where most of our students would stay in halls for all 3 years, which probably to some of you sounds awful. I really liked it, and all my meals were cooked for me. So equally brilliant. And the only thing that was wrong with that, though, was what you were given was what you had. There was no kitchen that I could use to make more if I wanted more. We'd come into the dining hall and sit in tables of eight, and we were given a dish, and we'd share that between eight. And I was so particular with making sure that this dish was cut up into equal eight portions and that I got my equal part. And you might think, oh, Georgia's just fair. She's just being fair. I wasn't being fair. I am just greedy. I don't want anyone to have what could be mine. And I'm still the same, to be honest. If I go out for dinner and I'm sharing a pudding or something, I will make sure it's cut in half before either person starts eating it. And this boy, he could have been too greedy to share his lunch. If he gave it to Jesus, he might not have crossed his mind that he was going to multiply enough that everyone will have enough to eat. He might have been given it as an offering to Jesus, not expecting to receive anything back. But yet he still gives it. Another reason why I might not have given this lunch is because actually it looks a little bit pathetic. It's quite a small amount in the vastness of what was this situation. And sometimes I think this can stop us giving as well. Such a small amount. But we shouldn't not give because we underestimate what we can bring. And we shouldn't not give because we underestimate what God can do with it. But I fall into both of these traps. But even so, the truth is that we are called to give. And in not giving, we are missing out. But in giving, we are joining in. Now imagine being that boy who has given his lunch. And he's seen Jesus give thanks for it and started to give it out to all the people there. He would start giving it to one person. He'd think, oh, he's giving it to another person. He's giving it to another person, to another person. If it was me, I'd run up to those people and say, did you get bread from that basket? How much bread did you get? You got enough to feed you to the next person. You got enough to feed you. You also got enough to feed you. I mean, once it's happened 50, 100 times, I'm guessing you're starting to realise a miracle was taking place here. Then I might be like, you know, that's my bread. That's my fish. You know, it would be really exciting to be part of it. It'd be so exciting to be with Jesus in him, in this situation. Because this boy gave, he is fully involved in this miracle. He is fully involved in the work of Jesus. And he is fully involved in bringing the kingdom of God. Of course, Jesus could have created enough food for everyone, but that doesn't show his character. His character is to work with his people, to work with his church. Jesus used what was given and he multiplied it. And in bringing so, and in doing so, he brings us in to the story. In our giving, we are joining in. And if the boy had been too greedy, if he didn't think that his offering was enough, then he still would have got lunch himself. But so many people would have missed out. And he would have missed out so much as well on joining in with what God was doing. And there are lots of things that we can give. We can give our food. We can give our time. We can give the skills that we have. And we can also give our money. Jesus really cares about how we use our money. There's 16 parables about it, 2,000 mentions across the Bible. If you are visiting us tonight, don't feel that we are asking you for your money. But if you feel that All Saints is your church and you aren't given, I'm just asking you tonight to think about if you can give. We don't want you to give so that you put yourself in a bad situation. We don't want you to give so that you have to borrow from someone else or to give so that you are in debt. We don't want that. But for you to give what God is calling you to give. And if that's money, then how much? I really believe that All Saints is working with Jesus in bringing his kingdom. Through the work that we do with our children's work, with our work with Christians Against Poverty, with our community cafes, All Saints all around the world, where we give money to people who used to come to All Saints who are doing God's work across the world who otherwise wouldn't have the money to do it. With the Alpha Course, some of you gave to the Alpha Course, and we are seeing fruit of people coming to know Jesus and people growing closer to Jesus because of it. There's a whole bunch of ways that All Saints are joining in with what God is doing. And please come and talk to me or Jenny or Jonathan afterwards if you want to talk about, where does our money go? What do we do with it? What are we supporting? If this is your church, and I want to encourage you to give to the work of it. Together we are working with God to bring his kingdom. Let's be a part of it together. And yes, it could be a sacrifice, but we have the best example in Jesus. John pointed us back to the Passover where we remember the blood of the lamb being smeared across the door frames. But it also points us forward to Easter, where Jesus was broken and his blood was shed. Our Lamb, the ultimate sacrifice, so that we may have life because of him. And there is so much fruit that can come from living sacrificially with him.